Hello and welcome to This Week in Oklahoma Politics on KOSU. I'm Michael Cross, along with ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel and Republican political consultant Neva Hill. We start in the U.S. Senate this week, where the Keystone XL pipeline failed to advance by just one vote. Neva, the defeat was lambasted by many Oklahoma officials, even though our state would see little, if any, impact on the construction of the Canadian pipeline.
Well, I think it's a national issue, and it's one that had really many ramifications, I think. First of all, I think the defeat dealt a blow to Mary Landrieu's campaign ahead of the December 6th runoff, where she is trailing Congressman Bill Cassidy. And I think this was an attempt by many, including herself, to try to rally the troops and say that she could be a powerful senator and effective and kind of bring this issue home, and was one vote short, even though she whipped it very hard and tried to secure the votes that were necessary. I think the bigger picture is this is an issue that nationally, when you look at the polls, more than the last survey I saw was 58%. Of Americans at least were somewhat supportive of the idea of this pipeline going forward. So it's an issue the Republicans have thrown down the gauntlet and said they were short this time, but it will be a major objective and initiative in the next Congress. And so we've got a lot more to hear about this in the days ahead.
Ryan.
Yeah, I think whether or not this happens in the future with the Republican Congress, with a new Republican Senate or not, I think environmentalists can claim a huge victory on this issue, because what they've done is they've taken this obscure issue of tar sands oil extraction in Alberta, and they've moved it to the top of the political agenda, where even Democrats like Mary Landrieu, the president, the Senate, a lot of these campaigns, everyone was talking about the Keystone Pipeline. And whenever you can influence a national dialogue in that way, that's really incredible, and I think it's very powerful. I think it bodes well for them when they're talking about more consequential issues surrounding climate change, like the environmental impact of energy production, methods like fracking, CO2 emissions, which the president has this historic landmark agreement with China over the week. You know, I think that these are some really big areas of progress we'll see regardless of whatever happens with Keystone. I do think that it's probably likely that the deciding factor on Keystone is going to be the price of a barrel of oil, whether or not they're able to develop rail in the meantime. Those are ultimately going to decide whether this happens. And if it does, then the environmental opponents are going to be able to point to the fact that gas prices aren't going to be any lower, oil prices aren't going to be affected all that much, and at the end of the day, we're going to see less than 50 permanent jobs as a result of this.
Well, and I think it is a political, interesting political fight. When you look at the kind of the green base, I mean, there were statistics that showed that they spent at least $80 million in these midterm elections trying to make sure that folks that were supportive on their side got reelected. And, of course, as we know, energy industry and business certainly supportive of the pipeline. So it is the give and take, and it's which side you want to be on, but there are consequences. And I think the president's going to have to take a hard look at where the American people are on this issue.
And boy, this did turn on politics. I mean, this vote in the Senate was the kind of theater that I think Americans and voters are really sick and tired of, because the outcome of this vote was, whether or not the Senate got the 60 that they needed, which, the 60 threshold to get anything done in the Senate, that's another conversation.
Yeah.
But whether or not they got the 60, the president was very likely to veto the bill. So, this was really all theater. I think that the Landrieu campaign really wanted this out there. I don't think it has that much of an impact on her race. I think that she's going to lose, it's just a matter of how much she loses.
People are waking up to the fact, though, that this has been stymied for 6 years, buried with study after study, and really an effort by the green group, if you want to call it that, the environmentalists, who are absolutely have kind of drawn the line in the sand on this one issue, and it's one that the fight and the stakes are getting higher, and I think the support is lessening.
Well, no, so now I'll disagree. A lot of the scholarship on this, talks about how radicals on both sides of the political aisle often drive what happens in the middle. And here is one of the rare instances where you see liberal activists that have really driven what's happening in the middle now. And I think that even if they lose on Keystone ultimately, which they haven't to this point, the fact that they have driven this conversation on tar sands, I think bodes well for their efforts on other issues in the future.
Well, and a Republican majority coming up will be in a position that even if they can't get a broader energy agenda pushed forward, they will be able to do some things like take a bill like this and tie it to appropriations and make it a very interesting battle internally.
Yeah. It's going to be very, especially who's going to be in charge of energy and the environment very very soon. Tulsa Republican Senator Brian Crane is suggesting lawmakers consider a $5 billion bond. That's a billion with a B. Half of it would go to common education. Half would go to higher education. It would also need to be passed by Oklahoma voters. Ryan, what do you think of Senator Crane's idea?
You know, I think it's funny that Senator Crane is now running around looking for money for education whenever he voted for the horizontal trilling credit and, well, the entire gross production credit, which is a, you know, over a quarter of $1 billion a year giveaway to the oil and gas industry. It's like, you know, giving away all your hens and then going to Jimmy's Egg and paying for omelets with a credit card. You know, that's what he's doing right here. So, of course, everybody wants to talk about education, how to fund education. And this, you know, I laud his commitment to doing that. But it's difficult to swallow on the heels of the last legislative session when we gave millions, hundreds of millions of dollars away needlessly to the oil and gas industry.
Neva?
Well, I think, first of all, let's set the backdrop. I mean, for the last 21 years, when you look at polls, the number one, two, or three issue has been education among Oklahoma voters. The most recent poll shows that nearly a third of Oklahomans say that this is the number one most pressing issue. So I think it's refreshing that in advance of the legislative session, we actually are not just talking about kind of kicking the can down the road, but we have a lawmaker who's stepping up and saying, yes, this is a bold idea. It's going to be tough sledding. He admits it up front, and so do his colleagues, that there's not a lot of, there's not in the House certainly been much interest in bond issue proposals. And even in the Senate, it could be difficult getting it out of committee and really getting a full hearing. But at some point, some of these folks, and I think Senator Crane is a perfect example, someone in their last term, their last 2 years, some of these folks that have to, I think, make a decision, do we step up to the plate and lead the charge and have the ability to do it, because we're not looking at the next election. And I think people want to see some results, and they want to see some real proposals advance, not just talk in rhetorical terms.
Meanwhile, Democratic Senator Randy Bass is authoring a bill in the next session allowing Oklahomans to register to vote online. 20 other states have this ability. Neva, could this become a reality in a state which constantly warns of voter fraud?
Well, I think it's kind of one of those issues like the Crane proposals, that it has tough sledding up front, but it is a national movement. You know, you're right. 20 states already having moved this direction, others looking at it. The obvious first question and criticism is posing the security issues and all of the things that have to be worked out. I think it will be really will remain to be seen in the legislature if there's enough interest overall to really push this idea forward in this session. But it's something that clearly is not going to go away, and they're going to have to deal with issues on how to make the whole process more efficient and engage more people in it.
Ryan?
Yeah, in the 20 states that have online voter registration, they can't point to a single incident of voter fraud or the system being hacked in any way. And I think that the idea of an electronic signature being this novel concept that people aren't familiar with, it may have been the case even, you know, 5 years ago, certainly 10 years ago. But today, electronic signatures, everything from bank documents to court filings, you know, they've become a routine part of transactions. And so I think that the idea of allowing voters to, or prospective voters to, sign a document electronically under the same penalty of law.
Right.
I mean, if I signed it with a pen versus signing it with a cursor, the same penalties of law apply if I'm committing fraud. And so I think that we'll get there, maybe not this session. Hopefully we will, but I'm glad that he's got it out there, and hopefully it'll get consideration.
And I think the tougher issue that they're going to have to face is the budget consideration. I mean, as Paul Zurich's pointed out during the study time, is they don't have currently the staff or the budget to be able to implement something like this. He pointed to Kansas and Arizona, states that have successfully done it. But that's kind of where the rubber meets the road on the dollar side, is that it does take more money to do these things.
The Tulsa World released a poll this week showing strong opposition to same-sex marriage. In the poll, more than 60% somewhat or strongly opposed gay marriage, while less than 30% supported it. Ryan, what did you think of the survey?
This is exactly why we don't allow fundamental rights to be put up for a vote. I mean, the rights that are guaranteed to us in our Constitution are put in a Constitution so that they are removed from the reach of the majorities. I looked back on the polls relating to interracial marriage. we didn't cross the 50% mark on approval of interracial marriage nationally, not in Oklahoma, but nationally until the late 1990s. In 1958, 4% of Americans approved of it. Around the time the Supreme Court struck down the ban on interracial marriages, 20% supported it. Now we're near 90%. And so I think that society wouldn't have come that far along if the court hadn't acted and allowed for individuals to exercise their constitutional fundamental right to marry. And now that it's been extended to couples and of the same gender, I think we'll begin to see that as well.
Neva, one interesting part of this poll was if you looked at it, it looked like the opposite of a bell curve, where you had strongly opposed or strongly support were very high. But in the middle, it was actually nothing. But so is this what everyone pretty much thought, was that Oklahomans still strongly opposed same-sex
marriage? I think it's really no change. I mean, if we remember back in 2004, Oklahomans, it was a 3-1 in favor of the constitutional amendment defending marriage as the union between one man and one woman. I think we have to draw a distinction between what the views, the personal views and opinions of Oklahomans are versus what's going on in the court system. And right now in Oklahoma, they're diametrically opposed when you look at the numbers.
You know, the two factors that really are indicative of where Oklahomans stand on this issue are whether they know someone who is LGBT or their age. I think if you put those two deals together, and now that we haven't been criminalizing an entire class of individuals for over a decade now, more people are able to come out to their families, to their friends, to their coworkers. The more Oklahomans realize that their gay, lesbian neighbors should exercise the same rights that they should, I think that we'll see this number go up, as well as, you know, an entire generation that probably doesn't come in contact with the LGBT community, begins to essentially
and
die.
I think that was one of the dramatic points in the polling, was that under 45, two to three times more likely to support based on that.
Yeah.
Now, on Tuesday, new and returning lawmakers got sworn in at the state capitol. By my count, there were 20 new representatives, with George Fott and Kevin Calvey returning after a short absence, and 10 new senators. Neva, any idea what we can expect from this freshman class?
Well, I think it remains to be seen. It's always exciting, the new faces, just the infusion of new blood and anything is always good. And I think in the legislative process, for the freshmen, it's always a learning curve. I mean, they'll spend, I think, the large part of the first session really learning the ropes, getting involved in the process, learning and becoming more familiar with the committee apparatus and deciding really where they want to focus their time and energy.
Ryan, you were there. With term limits, you really don't have much time to get your feet wet. You have to jump right in.
Right. You know, swearing in is such a huge day for these lawmakers, in particular the freshmen that are coming in, some of them after bruising campaigns, some after being anointed without having any opposition, probably too many of those folks.
That's right.
it's a big day for them. It marks the end of a long campaign and the start of service. And you're right, with term limits, you don't walk in with whenever I came into the legislature, there were folks that had served well beyond the 12 years. Mm-hmm. They were being termed out at that point. So now the longest serving member of the House now has been there for 10 years. And so that gives these freshmen a much more power than freshmen, 10 years ago had. You know, I would just ask them, to take care of your constituents. There's not a single bill out there that's going to beat you. Don't be afraid to change your mind. Put evidence under a microscope and remember that foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds.
There you go. And that's a good lesson for everyone. Ryan and Neva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.